You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus Vandenberg, and Brother Marcus. Welcome to episode 99.
I'm just here so I won't get fined.
This is episode 99, and we got a big show for you guys today. Not only is it the return of the Ringside Rap as we start our road to WrestleMania, not only are we going to give you guys our Super Bowl predictions in a very special edition of Second Down, but we've also got that ratchetness for you in segment four. But before we get into that, Marcus, I think, when you get close to milestones, it's a good time to look back and look ahead. So, what are you thinking about as we reach this number, this milestone in the history of the Kings of Sport?
Vacation. 2 days from vacation. Like,
who was that, player from the Lakers that year when they were getting eliminated? And he was like, everybody else was chanting next year and he was chanting Cancun.
Oh, I forget who that was. It wasn't Smush Parker. Nick Van Exel? It might have been Nick Van Exel.
I think it might have been Nick Van Exel. Everybody else was chanting playoffs, and he was chanting Cancun.
Yeah, I'm chanting Disney World.
But before you go to Disney World, you still have an obligation for the people, Marcus. And one of the segments of this show that has been taken off in leaps and bounds as the weeks have gone on is a little something that we like to call Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. And without any further ado, will somebody, anybody, Jesse in the sound truck, can you hit the music, brother?
Hit it.
It's time for the segment that's cooler than a polar bear's toenail.
Here's the puck to Seth Jones. Leg one for Jones. He scores! Seth Jones scores on the feed out of the left wing corner.
It's Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
All right. You're going to learn today.
Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate it. This week's Ask a Hockey Negro will revolve around Martin Brodeur. That's a name Nate even knows. That's how I know it. This is actually a good topic because Nate knows the name.
If he was in a video game, I know him.
There you go. He is finally retired. He will be stepping down. He actually will be retiring on Thursday and moving to the St. Louis Blues front office. And I'm sure if you're a casual hockey fan, you're probably wondering, St. Louis Blues, wasn't he a New Jersey Devil? Well, he was for his entire career until this past season, when he got the itch again to play, and St. Louis was without a goalie and signed Martin Brodeur to a contract, and he was pretty average to bad when he was on the ice this season, and he decided to hang him up at, I think, 42 he's at now. So that leaves just Jaromír Jágr of active players from, I believe, NHL 94, I want to say. So,
the last of a dying breed. Yeah. Not dying, just retiring.
Just retiring. he's the all-time win leader for goalies. I don't think he's the best goalie ever.
I was just going to ask you that because a lot of people, and it happens when people retire, you know, they get praise heaped upon them. And I've seen a lot of stories today talking about Brotour is the best to ever play in goal. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I would take Dominic Hasek over Brodeur, and I would take Patrick Waugh over Brodeur. And he's a goalie, it's just I don't know enough about hockey to go way back. But from 1990 on or so, I would take those two, and then I would put Brodeur third on my list.
Okay. Yeah, I was not, obviously I'm not the biggest hockey fan, but he is a guy that even I know as a, I wouldn't even say I'm a casual hockey fan. Whatever the level is between not caring at all and casual, that's where I'm at.
I don't give a fuck fan about hockey. That's the status you're at.
It's like I'll watch when it's the playoffs.
And even then, there'd be nothing else on.
Yeah, even then, it can't be an episode of Basketball Wives on because you know I'm switching. Forget you, Martin Brodeur. Jackie Christie is on.
Oof.
And that is quality television. So, yeah, so Brodeur hanging it up. I do think it's interesting. Do you think that this is one of those deals where he had that already kind of worked out before he even retired, where they're like, hey, man, you know, since you came in, you did us a solid. You know, if you want a spot in the front office, we got you.
Well, it sounds like he's going to eventually go back to New Jersey. And Lou Lamoriello, GM / head coach / everything over New Jersey, basically confirmed that, you know, Martin will always be a New Jersey Devil. And when it's the right opportunity to come back to the front office for New Jersey, that's going to happen. I think he'll only finish the season in the front office, and then after that he'll go back to New Jersey. So I think that might have been part of the deal going in, is because they have to pay his contract too. They're on the hook for his player salary as well. So at the very least, they can get some work from him in the front office.
I was going to say, so they just getting work out of that contract?
Basically, you got to finish this deal, man. We're paying
hey, Martin, are we $700,000.
Yeah.
We need some more coffee in the break room, fam.
Exactly.
Martin Brodeur pushing a mail cart. Oh, man. But yeah, big up to Martin Brodeur. Props on a great career. And
one last talking note. The All-Star game was this past weekend.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. In terms of All-Star games. I was going to ask you. Yeah, go ahead.
Pro Bowl. Because to me, I think that in descending order, the best All-Star game is still baseball.
Ooh,
the second best, I would go NBA. The third best, this is where it gets tricky for me. The third best, even though I'm not a big hockey fan, I'd put the NHL over the abomination that we saw at the Pro Bowl. Like the way they changed the rules, and it's like ain't nobody checking for the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I watched zero of the Pro Bowl because it went against the Rumble. I watched too much of the All-Star game, NHL All-Star game, which is not good. I would put NBA 1 just because it's a fun game. It doesn't mean anything, but those guys, they're in a sport that allows them to have a little more fun and creativity. And I think the NHL tries that, but it just comes off as, why is the goal even out there if they're not even trying to stop a shot?
NBA's got the best overall weekend, but yes. I still think just in terms of the All-Star game, I lean more towards Major League Baseball, even though like that last 5 minutes of the NBA All-Star game is great.
It's great. Major League Baseball, maybe it's just we've had so many, 2-1, 3-2 games that if there's a way, and there's not, to increase the runs for the All-Star game.
Oh, there is, but they outlawed it.
Well, one night only. Everyone did on the juice.
With your honorary hitting coaches, Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire.
Yeah, so I still think it's second, but yeah, Pro Bowl, I watched. Did you watch any of it?
No, I used to watch the Pro Bowl with some interest, but now the way they've got it, like all these gimmicks, they're narrowing the goalposts, and you got these former players picking teams where you've got NFC and AFC guys on the same squad. It
doesn't even make sense. NHL does the same thing, too. They have a draft.
Like, why?
And that makes it confusing, too, because it's, you're like, who am I rooting for? Like, team captains? I just...
You know how insignificant the Pro Bowl is? They took it out of Madden.
They did? Wow.
Yeah, like you'll just be like, if you play a season, instead of actually playing the Pro Bowl, it's just like, Pro Bowl week, would you like to simulate? Yes, that's the only option. Like, ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, the ratings were down for the Pro Bowl this year. The ratings were down for the NHL All-Star game this year as well. It's just not good. It's not fun.
How long do you think it is before they get rid of the Pro Bowl altogether? Because I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure the ratings did okay, but I can't imagine it being spectacular.
I think as long as it stays with the Super Bowl city and they stop doing the Hawaii thing, which I think they've done with, I think it has a chance because you can sort of lead that as you're leading to Super Bowl week as they did this year. But I mean, ratings are way down from last year.
The only time the Pro Bowl was cool was when they were in Hawaii, and they remember they used to do the quarterback challenge.
Yeah, they should bring that back.
Yeah, they bring that back because you have the little moving targets, and you got Randall Cunningham out there in his little Hawaiian shirt trying to throw passes. Like, that was great.
Yeah, I would rather watch that for 2 hours than 3 hours of football that doesn't matter.
And then we can finally settle the Andrew Luck, Cam Newton debate.
Oh, Andrew Luck all day.
I don't know, man. In Hawaii, get that little flowery shirt on Cam. You might see a whole different type of athlete. Depending on what Cam was doing the night before.
Exactly.
but that was another rousing edition of Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. Well done, Marcus.
Thank you.
And coming up next, you might not have been interested in the Pro Bowl. I don't think anybody was, but everyone, even your mama, your grandmama, your cousins and them, everybody is going to be watching the big game coming up this weekend. So, you know, we got to give you what you want in second down. Marcus and I are going to give you our Super Bowl predictions. So, Marcus, I don't want to hype this segment up too much because if we underperform, I think everybody's opinion of our show might get deflated. More Kings of Sport coming up next.
What in the wide world of sports is going on here?
Have the girl pounds on the gap for some. I've got 99 problems and the bitch ain't one. 99 problems but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. Yeah, it's 94 and my trunk is raw. And my rear view mirror is the motherfucking law. Got two choices, y'all. Pull over the car or bounce on the devil, put the pedal to the floor. And I ain't trying to see no highway chase with Jake. Plus I got a few dollars, I can wipe the case. So I pull over to the side of the road. I heard, son, do you know I'm stopping you for? Cause I'm young and I'm black and my hat's real low. Do I look like a mind reader, sir? I don't know. Am I under arrest or should I guess some more? Well, you was doing 55 and the 54. Uh-huh. Lost the registration and step out of the car.
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your pigskin preview, your gridiron gabfest, and your weekly football focus. It's time for second down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest news, information, and opinions in the world of sports, pro wrestling, entertainment, pop culture in general. And you can bet that they're going to have you covered this Super Bowl weekend. So you're down with the Kings. The Kings are down with Place to Be Nation. So why don't you get down with PlaceToBeNation.com? Obviously, folks, you're hearing that music, so you know what time it is. It is time for the final edition for a while of Second Down, the segment where we discuss all things football. And there's pretty much only one topic this week, Marcus, unless you want to go back and break down the Pro Bowl.
No, that's okay. I'm good.
You sure?
I'm positive.
All right. Well, the epicenter of the football focus for the world is in Glendale, Arizona this week at the University of Phoenix Stadium. It is the Super Bowl with the New England Patriots taking on the reigning and defending champions, the Seattle Seahawks. Marcus, we had a controversy, question mark, last week. Tempest in a teapot, if you will. But this week, that seems to at least be, I don't know if it's died down, but it's at least getting a little bit quieter because everybody is focused on what Marshawn Lynch is or isn't saying at Media Day.
We've discussed Mr. Lynch on the show. I believe last week we discussed him and how the media needs to just move on and let it go and, you know, find someone who's actually going to talk to him. But Marshawn Lynch had to fulfill his media obligation at Media Day on Tuesday. He had to sit there for 4.5 minutes, which I didn't know. I've attended Media Day, and I thought these guys had to sit for an hour because if you go around Media Day, you'll see the guy you've never heard of who's just sitting there by himself for the entire time just looking for people to talk to. So I figured they had to stay the entire 60 minutes, but no, just 4.5 minutes, and that's it. And Marshawn Lynch took the stage, and as we mentioned off the top, he had one catchphrase that he was going with, and that was that. Did you watch the whole his whole interview?
No, I didn't sit through the whole 4.5 minutes, but I mean, I saw the highlights, if you can call it that.
It was fascinating because he would say, "I'm just here so I won't get fined," with different inflections and tones. He would like toy with the media. He had Dion come over at one point, and Dion thought he was actually going to get an answer out of him, and it didn't work. He gave Dion the same treatment. It was great. You know, of course, this led to some people voicing their opinions against Marshawn and how he's an idiot and how he should get fined and blah, 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 blah. Whatever. I mean, come on. At this point, let the guy be. The league was going to threaten to fine him $500,000 if he skipped Media Day. So he did show up. He fulfilled his obligation. He did speak. It's not what you wanted to hear, but he did speak. It's not like he sat there and didn't say anything. He said something. 30 times, but he said something.
maybe we've got this all wrong, Marcus. Maybe Marshawn Lynch isn't being obnoxious. Maybe he doesn't have a social anxiety disorder. Maybe he's just the world's greatest performance artist. And this is all theater.
It might be.
Like 10 to 15 years from now, we'll look back and be like, Marshawn Lynch was groundbreaking, and everybody would be doing press conferences like that.
Yeah, it's a story that I feel like if Marshawn does come back next season, which it doesn't sound like it's a done deal, but I really think he needs to just get the doctor's note and get it done with. I mean, just get a doctor to say he suffers from social anxiety and he shouldn't be subjected to media. There you go. And it's really, he's done media. He's done different interviews with different outlets. I think he did something with Maxim. I saw him on, I think, Entertainment Tonight or something with Michelle Williams. Is that the Destiny's Child singer?
Yeah. It was Beyonce, Michelle, Kelly, and like three other random chicks nobody knows about.
Yeah. So he's done some media, but it's just, you know, it's just the crowd thing. It just seems to freak him out, which I understand. He was at least a story because the rest of the Media Day Tuesday was a total snore. Even Richard Sherman didn't really say anything too much.
I will say the one thing I liked from Richard Sherman's press conference and Media Day was he was like, you know, if the players have to get out here and answer questions for 5 minutes, so should Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
Like, I would have loved to have seen that. Like, whatever desk Roger's been hiding under, like, come on out and address the crowd, Commissioner.
Well, he's too busy with that investigation, right? The one where he hasn't talked to Tom Brady yet? Yeah.
The come on, man. Like, is anybody out there buying the NFL is actually treating this seriously in terms of getting to the bottom of this? Well,
Belichick treating this thing seriously.
Bob Kraft is treating this thing seriously.
Dr. Bill Belichick, scientist.
How ridiculous is this thing that we got Bill Nye, the science guy, out here debunking Bill Belichick?
And I still believe Belichick. After watching that speech on Saturday, he was so convincing, I was like, you know what? The Patriots are the victims here. Leave the Patriots alone. It worked. I don't know what the hell he was talking about, but it worked.
Oh. My only question, I didn't see a lot of the media day coverage, Marcus, and I ask this every single media day. Was my girl there this year?
Who? The Latina chick?
The chick in the wedding dress, yes.
They did not show her if she was there. The one guy the two guys they profiled for more than once, I don't know why, there was a guy who had a bunch of GoPro cameras strapped to him. He probably had 5 or 6 GoPro cameras hanging off his body and head. He was walking around. And then there was a guy who appeared to be, he was definitely topless. I don't know if he had pants on, but he was walking around in a barrel. A hefty set gentleman, shirtless in a barrel. So he'd had a
credential.
What
the one guy that got his credential revoked because he posted on Facebook?
Yeah, so that guy was he was working for the NFL this week on the Super Bowl. And on the NFL credential, which is different from the media credential, it says you cannot post a photo of this credential on the internet because that's how counterfeits happen. And he didn't either read it or ignored it or forgot, and he took a photo. And it was of some distance. It wasn't like a close-up, but the credential was in the shot, and NFL security called him and said, hey, you didn't follow the rules. We're going to have to, you know, ask you to not work for us this week, so...
Which I understand the rules and regulations, but again, you got time to find this dude on Facebook, but you don't have time to investigate and call up the Patriots and talk to Tom Brady.
Top flight security of the world, Craig.
Oh, man. But let's move from the ridiculousness of Media Day and let's talk about this game, this Super Bowl, where you have the Patriots and the Seahawks in a battle of perhaps two of the most, I won't say despised, but two coaches that people kind of throw shade on because of some of the actions that have gone on around their teams.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots have been hated for years now. Seahawks, I guess, it really didn't kick in until after they won the title last year. I mean, unless you were really that attached to what Pete Carroll did at USC and sort of, you know, unless you're a Pac-12 fan. I don't think people were that invested in Pete Carroll before they won the title. But especially between Pete Carroll and then Russell Wilson and his tears, that seemed to get people going. For some reason, people thought Russell Wilson crying wasn't genuine. And then the Marshawn Lynch factor. So, yeah, this team is not likable either. I am rooting for Seattle to win. I root for Seattle because of Pete Carroll. And I think Russell Wilson is a great story. I mean, this guy bounced around in college. He went from North Carolina State to Wisconsin, got drafted. He's not a big quarterback. He's not the ideal quote-unquote quarterback. And he won a Super Bowl. And as a black quarterback, that is a short list. That list actually doubled last year because Tavares Jackson was collecting a check. Still, T-Jets is still on the roster, but they got two black quarterbacks who are Super Bowl champions on that roster. So I'm still a Jets fan, but I tend to at least keep up with the Seahawks and see what they're doing. So as for the Patriots, yeah, I mean, it's Belichick and Brady.
How crazy is it that talked about Marshawn Lynch?
Your microphone is fumbled. It should be a new drinking game on the show. Every time Nate's microphone goes out, take a shot.
That one is hot fire.
I think Roger Goodell, you know, he heard what I was saying. He tried to shut me down a little bit. But we will not be shut down, Roger Goodell.
You can't be bought there, Roger. If you want to write us a chat to go away.
Yeah, if you want to write us a check.
We good.
But how crazy is it that Marshawn Lynch, for all we've talked about him, he is actually the more likable and the more respectable running back between the two teams? Because you got Marshawn Lynch on one side, and then you got LeGarrette Blount, a dude that quit on his team earlier this season.
Did you hear about the story from Media Day around that?
No, what's going on?
So LeGarrette Blount basically hinted that he quit on the Steelers because he was trying to get back to the Patriots. And who was the running back who got hurt for the Patriots?
Gray.
Ugh. He's out for the season.
They have so many random nondescript running backs.
Steven Ridley.
Whew. Yeah, I forgot all about that guy.
Yeah, so he knew Ridley and Blount are boys, and he knew Ridley would be out for the season, so he hinted that he might have, you know, done what he did to get back to New England, which is interesting because that's probably tampering of some sort. But
and we know the Patriots are above that.
Oh, please. They don't cheat at all. They're the victims here.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So now we've got the Patriots and the Seahawks. I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm not a big Seahawks fan. I really don't like the Patriots, though. I am not a fan of that organization. So this is going to be a tough call for me, Marcus. I'll let you do the honors, and you can go first with your prediction of the Super Bowl.
I am going with the New England Patriots. I think Belichick has now run the ultimate Jedi mind trick with his team, where he has come out and he's probably been telling these guys for 2 weeks now that it's us against the world, and you know, no one believes in us. And I'm sure he's got these guys ready to go on Sunday, all because of the stupid Deflategate crap. So I was on the Seahawks until Saturday's speech by Belichick, and he swayed me. So I'm sure he can sway his players as well. So I'm doing New England 28. Seattle 17.
Okay, and I think the Vegas Lions now are favoring the Patriots. I think the Seahawks opened up as a 2-point favorite, but now the Patriots are a 1-point favorite.
Okay.
So you're going with the favorite. I, on the other hand, am going with the Seahawks. I think it's going to be an interesting game. I think the Patriots find ways to win. They don't have the most impressive offensive talent, but they do have Tom Brady, and they do have a weapon in Rob Gronkowski that is hard to defend. But I bet against the Seahawks last year, and we see how well that turned out. The Legion of Boom may not be what it once was. Richard Sherman's not 100%, but I am going to go with that defense. And in the absence of any hardcore in-depth analysis, I'm going to go with my man, John Cutter. You might not recognize that name off the top of your head, Marcus Vandenberg. But John Cutter was a former police officer haunted by the death of his wife. And he went out and solved crime in a great movie called Passenger 57.
Oh, Wesley Snipes. Oh,
and boy. John Cutter's famous line is always bet on black. So I'm going with the black quarterback, and Russell Wilson will have two chips at the end of this weekend.
I hope you're right.
I think, let's see. I didn't give a score. I'm going to go Seahawks. What was your score?
28-17 Patriots.
28-17 Pats. Whew. I'm going to go Seahawks. Last year was a blowout. I don't think we're going to get that, but I do think Seattle's going to take it. I'm going to go 28-21 Seattle. Okay. So they win by a touchdown, and Pete Carroll ends up with two chips, and Russell Wilson, by default, becomes the greatest black quarterback ever.
I think he's already probably. Well, no, take that back. Well,
let's say so. You just kicking Warren Moon to the curb.
Yeah, never mind. I was only thinking Doug Williams. I wasn't thinking like the overall black quarterback landscape.
Kicking Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham. Jamarcus Russell, all them to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
Akili Smith.
Culpepper, all of them.
Culpepper. Mike Vick. Geno Smith.
Ugh.
We might have to do that one day. Do the all-time black quarterback ranking.
Yeah, did we get 10?
Let's say, can we get 10 great black quarterbacks? You know what, crazy fact? Josh Freeman is one of the all-time passing leaders for the Tampa Bay Bucks. Josh Freeman.
Wow.
So I don't know what that says about Josh or what it says about Tampa Bay, but I'm just putting it out there.
Wow. He was only there. He only played for a couple seasons.
Yeah. So.
It's not Brad Johnson, I guess.
No, not Brad Johnson. Or, not Vinny Testaverde.
Or who they have, Rich Gannon? Did they have Gannon for a minute?
I don't.
No,
I
know Gannon. They, no, Gannon played against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Gannon was in with the Raiders. I know they had Steve Young for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, damn, they've had some bad QBs then. Oh, Sean King. Yahoo Sports employee Sean King.
The pride of Tulane.
How is he not the all-time? Oh, you said he's on the list. Okay.
You know what might be crazy? This is a crazy fact. If we start going down the top 10 or 15 black quarterbacks ever, it's not going to be too long before we get to Aaron Brooks.
Yeah, you're right.
And that, more than anything else, might be an indictment of the history of the black quarterback in the National Football League.
Actually, Sean King only started, like, as a starter in 2000. Yeah, Trent Dilfer, Johnson, Brian Greasy, Jeff Garcia,
Chris Sims,
Trent Erickson, Testaverde, Steve DeBerg. That's something about Steve Young, Dud Williams. Dud Williams has started quarterback for 5 years almost. Wow. And yeah. Do you want to name? Do you want to guess their first starter in 1976? You'll never get this one.
It's I already know the answer because I heard it. I heard Tony Kornheiser talking about it, so it's a little bit of a cheat. But the first starting quarterback for the Buccaneers, the old ball coach.
That's so great.
Steve Spurrier.
Steve Spurrier. boy.
Like that might be the like most random, nondescript roster of quarterbacks in a franchise's history.
More than the Browns?
Ooh, that's good. That's a good one. That's a good one, yeah, because if we're playing a fictional poker game where we're bringing bad quarterback history to the table and I open up with the Bucks and you come in with the Browns, that's a good one.
Because the Browns have at least played 15 playoff games since 1979.
I mean, they had Bernie Kosar was pretty decent.
Yeah. After that, I mean. Whew. I thought the Jets had it bad.
Yeah, at least the Jets had Broadway Joe.
And we had Vinny, too.
Yeah. And you had Mark Sanchez.
Hey, two AFC title games, man.
And ended up getting his coach fired, and Rex Ryan is now with the Bills and hawking Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
You see that commercial?
No, not yet.
Rex is challenging. He's throwing the challenge flag out on people eating boring pizza.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Which is weird because he's getting skinnier now.
Yeah.
Like, he's not fat, jolly Rex Ryan anymore, but he's plugging Pizza Hut, which is an impressive feat. I'm just going to let that sink in for a little bit.
I miss you, Rex. I miss you.
But, yeah, that is our Super Bowl predictions. That will bring a close to Second Down, at least for this season. We'll bring it back in time for the draft. But real quick, Marcus, in the Super Bowl, a couple of quick hits. A, do you think Marshawn Lynch will grab his package as he scores a touchdown?
No.
B, do you think Lenny Kravitz will be the biggest surprise guest that Katy Perry has on stage for the halftime show.
No, because my friend is performing with Katy Perry, so she will be the biggest surprise guest, Lauren Ball. are we counting Lenny as a surprise guest because he's already been announced? Or you mean someone else in addition to Lenny?
Someone in addition to Lenny.
Juicy J? They had that track together.
Yeah, they did. You know, it'd be really great if she brought Kanye out to do that one song.
Ooh. Oh, I'm going to say Snoop.
Snoop? Oh, yeah, that's right. She did have that song.
Yeah, I'm going to say Snoop Dogg.
She's got a lot of songs with rappers.
She's down to brothers, I think.
And finally, my final question. In the wake of this Super Bowl, will there be another controversy that befalls the Patriots?
You mean in terms of like the Deflategate stuff or something in addition to Deflategate?
Yeah, in addition, like will something new come out of the Super Bowl?
No.
They're going to be on their best behavior?
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think we'll hear any more noise out of that camp for a while. But we are going to hear some noise from the world of professional wrestling. Yes, this is not a game. This is not a joke. The ringside rap is back. And we're talking the road to WrestleMania. Are you ready, Marcus?
Is it April yet? Are we off this road?
We got to get in the fast lane first, but we going to get there.
All right.
So coming up next, the ringside rap with a very special guest to kick off our road to WrestleMania. Stick and Stay, episode 99 of the Kings of Sports rolls on right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport. We are back on the Kings of Sport, episode 99, and no, your ears are not deceiving you. That is the Ringside Wrap theme song. We're bringing it back. This past Sunday, the road to WrestleMania started. It was a bit of a rocky road, but each and every week, heading up to WrestleMania, we're going to have a different guest on to talk about their opinions of the WWE product and some opinions. So I figured what better way to kick it off than to unite my podcast partners, this gentleman that we're going to talk to today, formerly worked for the WWE, so he has some good insight on what goes on up at Titan Towers. And he is currently the co-host of Review and Impact, along with myself at the Fight Network and Live Audio Wrestling. So, ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, welcome to the Kings of Sport, Brother Brian Mann. What's going on, brother?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Quite the introduction. I appreciate that. Can you be there anytime I enter a room?
I mean, for a small fee, we can negotiate off air.
Everybody has a price.
Yeah, everybody's got a price.
I prefer a public negotiation, if you don't mind.
Let's start at $9.99 and work our way up.
A month? Sold.
But yeah, as we mentioned, the Royal Rumble was this past Sunday, and of course the internet's exploded with their opinions. And you know, since this is episode 99, Marcus, we'll tie it in because I think Vince McMahon himself might be sitting in his mansion saying, you know what, I got 99 problems, but hearing the internet, bitch, ain't one.
Yeah, I mean, this happened last year with Daniel Bryan. And when Batista won, we saw the reaction, and that reaction led to some change, which made the marks at home happy. They felt important. This year, same thing. Daniel Bryan did not win the Royal Rumble. Roman Reigns is now in the Batista role. And the change they're shooting for, it seems to be around the network, which we'll get into later on, but that had some good news this week. So, Bryan, first off, what was your thoughts on the reaction after the Rumble?
Well, after the Rumble went down, Nate and I actually, we spoke about the Rumble on the latest review of Impact. We made some predictions, and after the pay-per-view went down, I got some people reaching out to me asking if we were going to discuss the Royal Rumble on this week's episode, and my response was, if my head doesn't explode before then, my anger or whatever, my disappointment has sort of subsided. I mean, enough people, enough pundits, critics, prognosticators, whatever you want to call them, have gotten their two cents in over the last 48 hours. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's been said by a lot of people. The Rumble match itself was laid out terribly. The stuff they're trying to achieve did not happen. But I think the big thing that rings true to me over and over again that I keep going back to is that I don't think this was a smart crowd or a heel crowd trying to just put themselves over. And I don't even think it's necessarily they're upset that it was Daniel Bryan who didn't get it, that this was all just holdover from him. I think it's just the fans realize and recognize that Roman Reigns is not ready for this position. And they take offense to the fact that the Vince and what the product seems to be doing right now is telling people it doesn't matter who you want or what you think, or even if the talent is right, we're going to tell you what you'll take. And it's frustrating because if this was run like a regular business or if this wasn't a monopoly in the field that it was in, you would sell people something they wanted to see. You wouldn't just give them something and say, this is what you'll have. But I think this why it's getting people so worked up is because it just feels like it's Cena, like it's John Cena 2.0, that we're going to get the same thing we've had for the last 10 years of this company kind of ignoring its fans over and over again. And unfortunately, up until recently at least, the fans not really having an alternative. And I think that's kind of what we saw. I think we kind of saw was the tipping point of that this past Sunday.
But what do you think happened, Bryan? Because I think if you did this same finish a year ago, and let's say, Bryan, you kept him out of the Rumble and you had Roman Reigns win instead of Batista, I think the fans would have been solidly behind that choice. So what's happened to this guy in the span of a year where he has gone from somebody that the smart fans, quote-unquote, were behind to a guy that they're treating like the Samoan John Cena?
I think the big thing that changed was that last year Roman Reigns definitely stood for change. He stood for something different. Everyone back then knew that he was being groomed for this next top spot. That wasn't a secret a year ago. And I think people were just so strongly against the concept of Batista last year for a lot of different reasons that even Roman Reigns felt like something different. Not only that, but Roman Reigns was solidly booked last year. And he wasn't being overexposed. He was being used in these small power spots. And he wasn't being asked to talk a lot. The last 6 months have really exposed Roman Reigns and really shown that he is not ready for this position yet. So I think that's what people have sort of reacted to. The Roman Reigns character, quite frankly, a year ago and the Roman Reigns character now are not the same person. And I think it's that character now that fans are responding to. And the thing is, it goes both ways. It isn't just like the fans decided to turn against him. If he was booked well and he was ready for this spot, we would be embracing him. It isn't that we necessarily don't like him because he's like had stuff handed to him or anything like that. I think the reason why fans are detracting is because over the past year there has been a character change and it's not for the better.
Well, do you think the reaction is specific to Roman Reigns, or is it, you know, tied to Daniel Bryan, because I think that if you had kept Bryan off of television until after the Rumble and brought him back for Fastlane, that maybe some fans would have a problem with Roman Reigns, but it wouldn't be this pronounced.
I agree. And there's been a lot of people who've sort of discussed how you could have done this match better. One of the ones that I heard over and over again was, you know, just hold Daniel Bryan off. Don't put Daniel Bryan in that spot yet. Or that was a big one. Or like rearrange the way that it was the match order or something like that. Honestly, I think one thing that could have really helped was if instead of bringing Daniel Bryan back and put him in the Rumble match, what if you'd brought Daniel Bryan back and had him face Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble and actually have that match go on last? I think enough of the fans in the arena would have been solidly concentrated on that match and wouldn't have gotten their ire up so much during the Rumble match itself. Or even, let's say, maybe we do that Daniel Bryan match next month. I think that if you at least give the illusion to fans that Daniel Bryan is at least getting a shot, because right now it's not only not satisfying from a smart standpoint of kind of knowing what the behind the scenes are, it's not satisfying from a casual fan standpoint either. Here's this guy who's this arguably the actually most popular guy in the company who never lost his title and is being brought back to have, you know, casket matches on SmackDown. So I think even the casual fans are aware of that and they see that and they have no reason to turn their back on him yet, or at least feel that he has been given a fair shake by the heel owners, both in storyline and in real life.
Just to move away from the Rumble for a minute, you know, we've seen with Del Rio and how much that's paid off for him going, leaving the company, with AJ Styles leaving TNA. If you're Daniel Bryan, at one point do you sit back and look and say, hey, look, I can be the king of the indies and the king of New Japan if I decide to leave the company? Is this even worth it for him?
I actually tweeted this out. If I were him, I would be giving serious thought to leaving. I could see how, on one hand, the major thing that I don't think is really being factored into this that would definitely maybe make him stay is he travels with his wife. Yeah. And gets to spend a lot of time with his wife. And the thing that's interesting is I saw this or read this interview with him where he was talking about how WWE gives all of their talent these like personality tests. And they gave him his, and they came back, and the person who gave the test said, "You are the least ambitious person I have ever met."
Wow.
Like, you're just like off the charts, not ambitious. And his response was just no. Like, he laughed and he's like, "I'm ambitious. I'm just not ambitious on the things that you're charting me on." He just wants to be an amazing wrestler. And when you hear him talk, it's clear that he's one of these guys who's more interested. Like, when he tells the story about how he got let go from WWE, he was let go before this, but after the whole NXT, you know, choking Justin Roberts thing, he wasn't upset about it. And that kind of surprised the company. He's like, hey, I'll go back on the indies and I'll make more money than I ever made. Thank you. I enjoy being here. I think for him, knowing how much, for example, he's watching, you know, New Japan right now, I think he would be just as happy, if maybe not more happy, being able to go out on the indie scene and do what he truly loves. But the thing that I think people overlook here is that he does travel with his wife. And I think he, you know, obviously really enjoys being with her. That's why they're married. So I think that's going to play a major role into the decision for him.
Do you think that kind of laid back Northwestern personality kind of plays into the way he's perceived from the higher ups? Because, you know, we talked to Court Bauer and, you know, I've heard interviews with other people that have worked in that environment. And it seems that one thing Vince McMahon respects is the guy that's going to go out there and go after that brass ring, like you said on the Steve Austin podcast. From being there, do you think that that might be something that plays into why Daniel Bryan seems to always get shuffled back into the mix or out of the mix?
Well, I think they have a very narrow view of it. You know, Vince, he kind of, for all of his positives, he is kind of a bully, and he fosters a particular type of environment because of the kinds of people that he surrounds himself. And then those people surround themselves by similar people and so on and so forth down the line. It's this weird sort of like I won't name names, but when I was there, I would see sort of like what you would notice kind of being the chain of bullying in a high school, for example. Someone gets bullied by Vince, making the people below him feel kind of like weak and powerless. Thus, those people below them to get their esteem back, bully the people below them, and so on and so forth down the chain, sort of a thing.
Be a star, and Vince. Be a star.
Be a star. And with Daniel Bryan, he just doesn't fit into that. And he's, I mean, I think if you were to say, like, I mean, the guy started, you know, wrestling when he was 16, and he has sacrificed almost everything in his life to get to where he is. And that's one of the reasons why that moment of him main eventing WrestleMania is such a satisfying, just personal conclusion to his story. But I think they look at a person like that, and it's just someone that Vince doesn't understand. You go back to the Steve Austin podcast, and he mentioned like how millennials, you know, the very famous millennials, just aren't ambitious. And then he listed off the people that he did think were ambitious. Daniel Bryan's name wasn't on that list. I think he looks at a guy like that and is like, oh, he's got this long hair and he wants to live on a farm, and like that just doesn't compute with him about how can that person fit into our very specific northeastern power structure. And it's a shame, because I think that that nice guy Daniel Bryan aspect not only makes fans really – draws fans to him, but I think is kind of what people are looking for at large from their celebrities in this social media age.
It wasn't until after the Rumble Sunday when I realized I'm at that point in my life where I don't care enough about wrestling to get this upset over the ending, going back to the Rumble. I was just floored by not only the canceled WWE Network hashtag that was trending, but just I checked out the Squared Circle thread on Reddit a lot, and just the passion and thought and just some of the opinions they have towards the booking. I'm just like, that's when I realized I don't care enough. And we've joked about on the show, we stopped doing wrestling talk on a weekly basis once Alfred left, because I watch the product when I can, but I'm not deeply invested into the big two companies, which would be TNA and WWE. In terms of you being a wrestling fan, and after hearing your thoughts on the first 2 weeks of like Impact, how would you classify your wrestling fandom at the moment?
Well, I feel like I've been led into a trap here, because I actually did cancel the network on Sunday night.
Oh, you did? You're one? Okay, so you actually did it. All right.
Because I saw that it was trending, and I saw some people were doing it, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And I canceled. And my subscription doesn't actually run out until the day after that Triple H Austin interview, so I lucked out.
Good timing.
But
don't watch it. You canceled. You can't watch it now. Sorry.
No, I'll continue to use it. I paid for it. So the way that I feel about a thing like that is, and I had some people like saying like throwing some shade my way on social media because of that. The way I feel about it is, I'll probably get the network again. I'll probably rejoin again when I feel like they have a product that I want. And who knows, that might be the very next day. I don't know. I actually rather enjoyed a lot of the changes that they were forced to make on this past Monday's Raw. My wrestling fandom, where it is right now, when it comes to WWE, has never been lower. When it comes to TNA, I think I would say that it is a professional obligation at this point. And
how polite are you?
But there's a lot of stuff when it comes to ROH, New Japan. There's a lot of indie stuff, obviously Lucha Underground. There's never been as many things to sort of digest, which it's great as we see this DIY kind of online commerce allowing a lot of different voices to get out there. Now, obviously, that means that we're going to get a lot of really terrible stuff that ends up online that makes you just roll your eyes, makes the entire industry look bad. But that can be said for everything. That can be said for music. It can be said for art. It can be said for film. The more voices that come into that get a place at the table, some are going to be great and some are going to be worse than you would ever imagine. Some of these indies are just a level of terrible that can't even be wrapped around your head, and Vince could never get to that level. However, I think there's enough creative voices out there that it's a really exciting time if you're willing to just kind of like look off the beaten path just a little bit. And that's why it upsets me with WWE so much, is that I get kind of passionate about what they do, because they are kind of the flag bearers for this this art form in this country. And it sort of, you know, I get worried sometimes when I think about the fact that we could potentially lose this very intriguing form of entertainment, in my opinion, due to one company's mishandling of it. So when you look at a thing like what happened at the Royal Rumble, and you see it as sort of a thing of, well, this company is just going to do whatever they want to do. Fan base be damned. And who knows when that tipping point will come, and hopefully we never actually get to it. But that's why, at least for me, I get a little bit more concerned about it, just because of the sake of this industry.
Just to follow up real quick on that, I think when I view the network, I view it independently of the actual TV product, if that makes any sense. So when I view the network, I look at it as a separate entity that I think is a good service for wrestling fans, not just of the current product, but of the past stuff. So I think that's why I've never had the thought of canceling the network, because when I think of the network, I think of, you know, the archive stuff, and yeah, it shows the pay-per-views, but I haven't reached the point yet where the pay-per-views have offended me to the point where I'm ready to cancel. Now, as for Raw, I haven't watched Raw completely all 3 hours in weeks now, because I feel like that is a separate issue than the actual network itself.
Oh, exactly. And I think what you're speaking to there is actually something that the company should look at in a positive. I think WWE, as they get larger and bigger, should not be looking for the next, like, the one big guy. I think they need to be diversifying. Now, what that means is that it's going to require a different way of running business, because it's going to require Vince to not have his hands in everything that the company does. One of my favorite things WWE does, even though I don't watch it all that often, is Total Divas, because it's them specifically saying, we're going to make a product for a new audience that doesn't typically, that isn't typically a consumer of ours. And I think that's a great way to go. I think the WWE Network, if there's been one big misstep that I've seen, is that they're programming it too much for the casual WWE fan, which it will never be for. Don't, like, go after that hardcore audience. Maybe you're not going to be able to monetize those older fans that aren't going to sit through Raw every week. That's fine. You know, have this network where you can go after that. I would love to see them produce more cartoons, things like this, and maybe even, like, do that crazy thing and have an adult show, have one show that's TV-14. I would love to see them diversify more. Maybe you don't get an arena full of, like, booing fans in Philly, because they have a show where Daniel Bryan is the star. But then there's also a show where Roman Reigns is the star. So the fact that you're saying, you know, obviously the company is getting, you know, obviously you're giving the company money for the network, but not necessarily consuming their new product. I personally think that's a perfectly fine thing, and something that they should look into more often, rather than saying, okay, how do we satisfy everyone with one product? Because that's not, I just don't think that's going to lead to long-term success, personally.
Now, we've mentioned this past Monday Night's Raw a couple of times, and, you know, Mother Nature and let's just say God, he was getting his payback for that loss he took to Vince at Backlash 2006. you know, the weather.
Long-term booking there.
Yeah, it's definitely a long-term, the longest program they've had in a while. But, you know, it forced Raw to be canceled. And I think it was actually a blessing in disguise, because the work that was put into setting up Reigns and Lesnar as we head towards WrestleMania, I think Roman Reigns hasn't looked that good in a while.
Oh, exactly. I mean, and the thing is, coming out of WWE after the very brief time I spent there, that's one thing. I always want to make sure I don't, like, build up my time there as anything larger than it was. For the time that I was there, that's a huge thing that I noticed, was that the way that they do television really limits you from telling a lot of different kinds of stories and telling stories in a particular way. The thing that I loved about that live show was that It actually had some semblance of a fourth wall, and they weren't in front of, you know, 15,000 people. That final scene between Brock and Reigns and Heyman was so great because of the silence that you were able to have, because of the fact that you could have those moments to just allow things to seep in, and you could be a little bit more subtle, and you could have more nuance. A lot of what that Raw forced them to do are honestly things that I've been advocating for Raw to be for a long time. If it was up to me, at least an hour of Raw would not be live in front of the crowd. I think that for this thing to be a television show, you have to move past the idea that it's just a live product, that you're just broadcasting a live show, because it kind of forces you to think outside the box a little bit more, but you also have other things to your advantage. You can pre-tape things, you can do a second take on stuff. Something that people kept reaching out to me and asking my opinion on was the fact that Roman Reigns apparently had an earpiece in during those segments, and Vince McMahon was feeding him lines. that's fine. That doesn't upset me, because in the end, if it worked, it worked. But that's something you can't do in front of so many people. And this is something that just, to me at least, speaks to Kevin Dunn, who has been their executive producer for so long and has not changed the format of that show in almost two decades. Last week, or this past Monday, forced him to think outside the box, and I think that what they got out of it was a vastly improved television show. Obviously, it helped that they were playing two amazing, in terms of fan interest, matches from the evening before. But if you take that and just look at all the in-studio stuff, I thought all those interviews were just far and away so much better than a typical 20-minute promo in front of the fans. And on top of that, having Daniel Bryan say maybe talk for 5 minutes instead of wrestling for 20 minutes, it makes watching him wrestle seem special. And it also made everyone on that show feel like a star, because I just can't tune in whenever I want and watch them wrestle. I can tune in and watch them talk and get to know them a little better, but when they wrestle, that's a special thing. And that's something I really appreciated out of that show.
Let's transition into TNA, because that's the show that you guys do.
Do we have to? Is that a requirement?
It's a requirement. Yeah, so I am not the biggest TNA fan. I tolerate Nate's TNA opinion. I don't agree with it always, but, you know, I'm his friend. I'll listen to him. The bits and portions I've seen so far since the Destination America move has been interesting. Is this company, I mean, I know they have a deal for 2 years for Destination America, but I mean, in terms of making money, I just don't see how the current model outside of their TV deal is set up to actually have this company be sustainable and healthy past this 2 year deal.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Everyone's kind of talking about how today the new numbers came out, and they are up to over 500,000 viewers now on Destination America.
Which
they've grown their audience every week. It's impressive and literally insane, in my opinion. It's really mind-blowing, but at the same time, there are a lot of things about this deal that we don't know. They are, for starters, making more content for Destination America than they were for Spike. They have, I think, like 3 or 4 shows on Spike now. They have Impact, they have Impact Unlocked, they have a Rivalries show, and also a Greatest Matches show. So they're making more content overall. I don't know how much time goes into that. And we also know how much they're making. If I had to guess, they're making less money to make more content.
Yeah.
So, yeah, their viewers are going up, but they had a hard time selling out those shows. And they didn't sell out those shows in New York. When they go over to the UK, we'll see how it goes over there. But those have kind of been hit and miss depending on city to city. And then they're going to be returning to the Impact Zone for 3 months, 3 or 4 months at least, when they get back stateside. So who knows? They have no plans of running live events. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure the TNA Knockouts banners are filling in that dividend gap beautifully. But outside of that, I do look at that company and wonder, how do you make this thing work? Now, you know, playing devil's advocate, you look at a thing like Lucha Underground, which is getting far less viewers and spending far, like, so much more money, it's not funny. However, they have at least public opinion on their side, and they have the support of the industry. They did their tapings. Lucha Underground did this this past week. The number of influential top people in this industry, when it comes to journalists, independent promoters, just names to know, they were all there. They were all at that show. The amount of positive buzz that there is behind this is huge, and it's something that TNA, it's something WWE loses sight of sometimes, is that it is a good thing to have the tastemakers on your side. There's a reason why Breaking Bad got so big. It's because it appealed to all the people who write for websites that tell you what TV shows to watch. It's okay to appeal to a higher brow, because hopefully those tastemakers then go out and bring eyeballs to your product, rather than trying to be as lowbrow. So yeah, TNA, great. You got 500,000 viewers. But is your product being respected? Is it being talked about in a positive light? Are you going to be able to realistically grow? Or do you just have so much baggage from the last 10 plus years of your existence that it might not even be worth it at this point?
they've taken a step back, but I also think there's opportunity here. But like we talk about on Review and Impact each week, much like a sports franchise that has potential but bad ownership or bad coaching or a bad GM, they can't make the same mistakes they made at Spike. I think it's a promising sign that the numbers are going up on this network that I'm sure still is a bit of a reach for people to get. But in terms of the overall business plan, I don't know where they're going to go.
Yeah, because you and I, we spoke about it this past week, the concept of them having a bad front office. But unfortunately, at the same time, that front office is the only thing that makes them TNA at this point because they've had such a huge turnover. The big thing that this company needs, because let's just look at, for example, Lucha Underground. What they need is strong leadership that has a strong creative track record, and not track record, but a strong creative concept and vision. As warped as it was, you at least look at Vince Russo and say he definitely had that. But we look at Dixie Carter, and I think a lot of what they do is just like, oh well, this is just what I think wrestling is, and not to put down their creative team, but their creative team is essentially David Lagana and John Gaborik, people who learned how to do wrestling by working at WWE almost a decade ago. So we don't have people who, at least in my opinion, based on their matchmaking, based on the way they present their show, they don't really appear to be fans of wrestling, if that makes sense. They don't really appear to have a great understanding of a history of wrestling. So all they think is this very narrow, 5-year period of WWE, thinking that's how you do wrestling and we just need to replicate that. Whereas you look on the other side of the fence, you look at Lucha Underground, it's very obvious from the way they do their set, from the way that they put their matches on, to the matches they do, to their commentary, to their backstage segments. They have a strong artistic view of where to take things. And you need both. You need people who are obviously the sensible money people collaborating with the, quote-unquote artists coming together to make a product that can actually work. But you watch Lucha Underground and they clearly have an artistic vision. They know this is what we do, this is what we don't do. TNA doesn't have that. TNA just feels like, oh, we're a wrestling company and this is how you put on a wrestling show based on what we think the industry standards are from what WWE has done. And I just wish that they shook things up a little bit more. For me, the poster boy for that is Josh Matthews. Nothing against Josh. He's very good at his job. But what besides working for WWE does he really bring to the table? Nothing. He's part of that class of WWE announcers who are just bland white dudes with no personality because that's what they wanted. You watch him, he doesn't bring an attitude, doesn't bring anything distinct to the table. And I just wish that, I wish they had a little bit more of an artistic vision for themselves.
I'm on the TNA website checking out the pay-per-view schedule, and there's a banner ad for One Night Only Rivals premiering February 6th, so I clicked on it. It takes me to a page that has dummy tets. So there's no information about the actual pay-per-view because it's the actual tets they haven't filled in yet. So that tells you all you need to know about TNA at the moment. But I don't even know when they taped this. I don't remember them taping any one-night-only specials anytime recently. And they're not in Florida until 2 weeks from now, so I'm kind of curious of what this actually is going to be. But February 6th, Nate, I'm sure you'll be home on a Friday night watching TNA. And this goes against their time slot on Destination America, right? Yeah, it
does. Oh, well, I'm sure we're going to...
Oh, yeah, it does.
Rage are going to plummet.
What to choose? Or pay-per-view?
Yeah, well, speaking about TNA's vision, they had a chance to hire a non-white guy with personality, but that's none of my business.
You got a phone call, at least.
Yeah, I got a phone call.
And that's the thing, you mentioned that, and I'm not saying they need to be so transparent as to say we are the black show. They don't need to do that. Just Lucha Underground obviously is going to have a Hispanic flavor, but they're not specifically just we're just Spanish. I think that we talk about it a lot on Review and Impact, the fact that their main heel stable is a black stable is a breath of fresh air.
Yes,
and I wish that they would just kind of go down that path a little bit more of okay, not only what can we do to differentiate ourselves, but don't let that be what guides all of our decision making. Don't try to just be different for the sake of being different. Try to be better. Try to have an idea for what you want to be. And I've said it before. I'll say it several times. I don't think that Dixie Carter, the, you know, 50-year-old white suburban, you know, woman, should be the one who's necessarily deciding this new bold vision for this company, especially when you consider how many great people there are out there. If I'm them, not only am I scouting the indies for talent, I'm scouting the indies for bookers. I recently kind of had like this change of pace, at least for me. I don't think that even WWE should ever publicly list their job openings for writers. They should go out there and recruit them from the scene, just like they never put anything on their website saying, hey, send us your resumes to be a wrestler.
Yeah,
I think it needs to be that same thing with the creative, because at least from my time there, and also the stuff that as I continue to sort of like, because I'm still enthralled by the creative process when it comes to pro wrestling, it's very obvious that there's few other things like it. That being said, I think that it does share a lot of basic similarities with a lot of storytelling. I think that just because, like, oh, you didn't grow up in the territories, or, you know, because your last name isn't Watts, that you don't know how to write wrestling. If anything, I think you look at a guy like Ryan Ward and all the great stuff he's doing down in NXT, and that's really showing how we need new, younger, creative voices in pro wrestling. And I wish that Dixie Carter was kind of making that her... was kind of making that her mission and trying to find those people, rather than saying, oh, well, I'm just going to take, you know, the lead writer from SmackDown in, you know, 2006.
All Dixie needs to do is sign the checks and hire people that are qualified, hire people that are going a different direction, and back away. That should be her role in 2015.
I agree. Find like a young, almost, I would almost say, scour the indies, find the youngest, hottest, different, most creative indie that is making like a firm name for themselves. And there's a few that like come to my mind, but find those people and try your absolute hardest to implement them, like to just make them impact wrestling. And I think that could have been the biggest thing when they're coming to Destination America. Get rid of that creative team. Get new writers. I think that would have been like, that's just to me, square one basic stuff. But instead they did like the WCW, you know, relaunch of like, oh, well, we'll have a new set. And that's it. Like, really, like, Nate, we've been watching the show now for almost a month. Do you think they've done anything? Like, it just like, there's new music and that's it, other than like these bizarre behind the scenes stuff that they're implementing.
Yeah, that's the only change. We get to go behind the scenes and see Jesse the Sound Guy.
That's just, I don't get why they're doing this. I hope they stop doing this. I don't understand why they're. If that's the fourth wall they want to break, I don't know why they want to break that one, because it just makes them come off as amateurish. I mean, and especially the first week we saw they were in the building, and now we're supposed to assume, oh, surprise, we're back in Nashville.
It's being creative. Yeah, it's when you're creatively bankrupt and you're banging your head against the wall to try to reinvent the wheel is really what that comes down to. If anything, I think that when it comes to the creative, or at least the writing process in pro wrestling, I think they need to be more open. I think they need to be more transparent. I almost think if you treated it as a comic book almost at times, maybe you publicly say, hey, and by publicly say, I'm not saying during your show, like it's a thing that just remains online, like, hey, we're bringing this one writer in to write this one storyline for these characters. I think that can maybe be an intriguing way to go about it. Be a little bit more open, and not only does that feel a little more honest with your audience, but it holds people accountable, and I don't think it pulls I don't think it like exposes the business. Just like seeing the writing credits at the beginning of a sitcom, don't ruin it for you. You don't watch Parks and Rec and say like, oh, Amy Poehler's not coming up with all these lines to herself, I can't enjoy this show. And I think pro wrestling could go down that same path.
That's a good point. And since, you know, this is a show we never pre-tape, we do everything live. So Brian, I want to thank you for sacrificing your Friday night to come and talk to us today.
I see what you did there.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm just watching Impact Wrestling right now. You won't imagine what's we're going to talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, it is crazy what's going on right now. It's a whole lot of stuff going on. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on, Brian. Anybody that wants to hear Brian and I discuss more about TNA and drift into racial tangents and social tangents and all sorts of crazy tangents, you can check us out every week on the Fight Network at Live Audio Wrestling, reviewing Impact. But Brian, if the people out there want to talk to you, want to hear your thoughts about the current state of professional wrestling. How can they get in touch with you?
You can get at me on Twitter on at Brian Max Mann. Typically, if you start tweeting me during Raw or during a pay-per-view, I'm more likely to respond to that. I enjoy talking about pro wrestling, and I'm sure, like most pro wrestling fans, I don't know that many people that watch wrestling, so I'm always open to discuss it with whoever, whenever. But yeah, reach out to me there, and of course, as I'm sure you're going to plug many times, Review and Impact. Check that out as well.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us, Brian, helping us kick off this road to WrestleMania. Next stop is Fastlane. Speaking of lack of creative vision, who came up with that title?
Vince.
We're on the road to WrestleMania. It's got to be fast, damn it.
I think it's Sparkplug. Sparkplug Bob Hobby came up with that one.
But yeah, you can check me and Brian out every Saturday night / Sunday morning, depending on when the internet allows us to get this show up. But yeah, Review and Impact, and we'll be sure to keep in touch, Brian, and we might have to have you back as we get closer to Mania or after Mania to get your thoughts on how this road has progressed.
Oh, I'm looking very, very happy to discuss the Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar triple threat.
Oh, you heard it here first. Swerve.
Special guest referee, the Vigilante Sting.
Gotta fit him in somewhere.
Well, that is.
As long as he wears a shirt, he'll be fine.
Hey, he's gonna wear the shirt and the TNA gloves. Well, that is Brian Mann. We are the Kings of Sport. And Marcus, I think, you know, we've talked about football. We talked about wrestling. Oh, real quick, Brian, Super Bowl prediction.
Someone's going to throw a football. Katy Perry's going to sing. I don't even know who's in this game. So that's my prediction.
Well, fortunately, it's a true wrestling fan.
How about this? Daniel Bryan's team is going to win.
There you
I'll
go.
Say that.
Seahawks.
There you go.
Hey, there's, and there's, WWE, WWE will completely ignore it the next night on television.
Oh, of course.
We talked some football. We talked some wrestling. But coming up next, Marcus, are you ready for the ratchetness?
I am.
All right. Well, stick and stay, everybody. Segment 4 is coming up next.
Of justice tremble, this fight starts with me. I'm not gay no more, I am delivered.
Oh man, hey,
Zingo.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/ the Kings of Sport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week, getting ready to end episode 99 with a bang. But before we do, I just wanted to let you guys know, remind you that the deadline is fast approaching for the nomination process for the 10th Annual People's Podcast Awards. And if you like what you're hearing, show us some love and go to podcastawards.com. Enter the Kings of Sport at thekingsofsport.com. You got to enter the name and URL of the podcast. You can nominate us for the sports category as well as either Best Produced, or People's Choice. So again, that is podcastawards.com, and we thank you for your support. But now, Marcus, it is time to get into segment four, our weekly look at ratchetness in the world of sports and pop culture. And, you know, we going to go hard this week, Marcus. We going to go harder than Miko Grimes on Twitter.
Oh, Brent Stripe. Okay, it took me a second. I was like, who's that? Was it,
Yeah, she almost made it into segment four this week, man. But I really want to talk about some boxing this week. And we got a couple stories involving the sweet science. And Marcus, let's go ahead and start it off with something that happened last night in South Beach.
Or three nights ago in South Beach. Right?
Which one is it?
Floyd Mayweather, Mr. Segment 4 himself, and Manny Pacquiao were both at the Miami Heat game, and this is news because there's been, for a couple weeks now, rumors that these two sides are working on a deal for a fight in May, but these two actually spoke to each other, which, as we found out later on, this was the first time they've actually talked in person, which I find hard to believe because they fought. In 2001, they fought on the same card. And I'm guessing maybe they never crossed paths in the locker room or anything like that. But they claim this is the first time they've actually met in person. And they the TV broadcast had a shot of Floyd and Manny at halftime exchanging numbers. And I guess Tuesday night, Floyd met with Manny's camp and Manny himself in Manny's hotel room. So this is a good sign. There's no deal yet, but it sounds like the big holdup is going to be that, you know, Manny Pacquiao is a HBO guy and Floyd Mayweather is a Showtime guy. And when you have two TV stations of that size, they need to figure out who's getting paid and what's the cut. But basically this pay-per-view, if it happens, will be co-promoted, I'm guessing, between both HBO and Showtime, which be groundbreaking in itself because these are two, rivals when it comes to boxing, but it's going to make sense for these two sides to work together in order to make all the money. So I think eventually in the end this fight will happen. I think this will be, when you look at the whole process, this night in Miami will be a big step for that fight to happen. But you know, more money, more problems when you're talking about a potential huge payday for both sides. It's going to take a lot of steps and hoops and hurdles for them to get through.
I agree, and I think that while this fight may not be what it was, you know, maybe 5 years ago, I think it's still going to be the biggest pay-per-view in terms of boxing that we've ever seen. Like, this is going to do tremendous numbers. Everybody's going to get broke off, and the main impediment, like you mentioned, is how they're going to divvy up that pie.
Yeah, and, you know, it's – despite a scheduled for, if it does happen, the date they're talking about is May 4th, that fight, and that day is actually now booked with a fight. If this fight doesn't happen, Canelo Alvarez will fight James Kirkland on May 4th. It looks like probably in San Antonio, but Canelo has said if the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight happens, out of respect of the boxing fans, he will move his fight with Kirkland. So Canelo's no dummy. So well, we're getting a fight of some sort on May 4th, whether it's Floyd or Pacquiao or Canelo Kirkland, which would be an interesting fight. We're getting something soon with the Mile Weekend.
Now, for all the sci-fi geeks and fans out there, that date is something that may have piqued their interest, Marcus. I know you know, you're not the biggest fan of that sort of thing, but May 4th is the unofficial Star Wars Day.
May the 4th be with you. Ha 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 ha.
So I'm wondering, will we get George Lucas in on this thing, man?
What's he going to do?
Man, what is he not going to do? You can just integrate Star Wars, because he's trying to pimp this new Star Wars movie that's coming out soon. So I think you integrate it into Floyd and Pacquiao. You know, maybe
did George Lucas wash his hands clean, though?
George is still about that money with his black life.
No, he's not involved. Disney.
George is still getting them checks, man. When that title comes up at the end, created by, George is getting a check.
But it's not Lucasfilm, though.
It might not be Lucas Films, but it's like he's come, like Georgia, a Star Wars product is not coming out without a check going to the Skywalker Ranch.
He's already got his check. Disney paid a lot of money for the rights. He's been broke off 10 times over.
I think you just hate, man. You think we get rid of Michael Buffer? And just think about it, Marcus. Sometimes, you know, I gotta walk Marcus down these paths, because this is, you know, you got to think of the big picture. What Brian Mann talked about, having a vision. Instead of Michael Buffer, which you've seen time and time again, how about your special ring announcer, Jar Jar Binks? Sounds a lot better now, doesn't it?
I'm just telling you, facts.
Misa, let's get ready to rumble.
Fats are fat. George sold in 2012. I'm sure we'll get the occasional George Lucas. Hey, what do you think about this Star Wars? Other than that, he's done. Now, if you want to bring Bob Iger and Eisner and those guys, sure. Mickey Mouse. He went Mickey Mouse involved in this Star Wars thing, but Lucas is done. It's all about the mouse.
I'm still holding out hope that we get James Earl Jones doing the pre-fight.
We'll stick with Buffer.
Wearing them tacky suits that he used to wear on them WCW pay-per-views.
Oh, I think I'm wrong here. According to the wiki, as of 2014, he's currently working as a creative consultant on the Star Wars sequel trilogy. The first movie, Star Wars Force Awakens, scheduled for December 18th.
I'm not going to say I was right, but...
Tony, the Red Times, go ahead. Say you're right.
I mean, you know, I'm a bigger person than that, Marcus. I'm not going to play you in front of the fans like that, in front of our family like that. You know, I mean, you know, I appreciate you admitting you were wrong, though. Takes a big man.
George didn't pay twice.
Young Padawan. but this is going to be a big deal, man. This is going to be a big deal. Like I said, man, it should have happened a few years ago, but I still think this is going to be a big thing, man.
Yeah, and don't say you're not going to buy the fight, because you're going to buy the fight. So I don't don't start the, oh, we're not, no, it's, no, you're going to pay for the money. You're going to pay the money to see the fight. It could be $100 you guys will pay to see the fight.
Yeah, this is going to be a big thing. And boxing, and I think pro wrestling are like the final remaining sports that traffic in racial stereotypes. Like, this thing is going to do huge numbers, and Manny is kind of the proxy white fighter in this case. So you're going to see a lot of people coming out hard riding for Manny Pacquiao, but we saw what happened a couple fights ago when he was asleep on that canvas.
With Marquez, yeah. That was Floyd doesn't have Marquez power, but he... You know, if you want to see Pacquiao get beat up in school for 12 rounds, then I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree, because people are like, man, Manny Pacquiao is just as fast as Floyd. Like, 5 years ago, maybe. Not now. Not the Manny that I've seen in the last couple fights.
No.
But it is going to be a big deal. But Marcus, let's switch gears and go from two fighters that maybe have some good news in their future to... Man, a champion that is down on his luck. He's got a fight scheduled in February, but he fighting life right now, and that is one Jermaine Taylor.
What did Jermaine do now?
Oh man, what did Jermaine not do? Boxing champ, this is from TMZ Sports. Boxing champ Jermaine Taylor has been ordered to undergo a mental evaluation after a string of arrests and strange behavior. The 35-year-old IBF middleweight champion had an interesting Martin Luther King weekend where he allegedly fired a gun during an altercation with his family at the Martin Luther King parade. Yeah, so Taylor went on YouTube and he blamed his outburst on the fact that the kids at the parade did not get candy. Which I didn't even know was a thing that you gave away candy at the Martin Luther King parade.
What kind of candy do you think Martin likes to eat?
I don't know. Martin Luther King looked to me like he looked like a guy that would get down with some Snickers.
I'm going to guess plain M&M's.
Okay, okay. It's plain M&M's, not the peanuts?
Not the peanuts. Probably too close to like George Washington Carver. He'd probably be like, eh. Plain M&M's.
Yeah, I don't want to gloss over. You know, I'm a big enough man to not gloat when I'm right, but I didn't want to gloss over that brilliant joke I just made. That Martin Luther King likes Snickers. Snick, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Man, that's a deep civil rights cut.
Wow.
I'm like, Henry Thompson is jumping out of his seat right now.
He's the only one who got that joke. He's the only smart enough one listening to this show.
Henry and maybe Professor Kaylee.
Chris got the joke.
Everybody smart else? Ronnie's sitting on the couch like, what are you talking about, man?
Where's my Snickers? I'm hungry.
We love Ronnie, though. But getting back to Jermaine, so he had the deal at the MLK parade. And he's also, you know, he was charged with aggravated assault and endangering the welfare of a minor. So he's going to get mentally evaluated, and those results are going to be presented to the court in April. You know what else is on Jermaine's record, by the way, Marcus?
No.
Before the MLK incident, Taylor has been arrested in August for shooting his cousin.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I do.
You know what else happened last year? Jermaine Taylor was accused of throwing a brick at a woman in December. Happy holidays.
Oh. You know what's going to be sad is we're going to find out that he suffered some type of brain injury from boxing, and this is causing all this behavior.
When is that going to happen, Marcus? Because, you know, it was a big deal, and it's still a big deal to some extent in the NFL, talking about CTE and the concussion debate, but boxing, a sport where you would think you'd have more evidence for some of these things, it doesn't seem to get the same type of traction. Do you think it's just because boxing isn't as big as it used to be?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are like or the statistics, but I wonder if boxing is still safer than football, even though you're taking direct shots to the head. You know, when you look at how many times a boxer fights in his career compared to how many games an NFL player plays, it might still be safer, despite the pads and helmets, to be a boxer than an NFL player.
That's a good question. I think with boxers, you can sort of tell more obvious in terms of like slurring speech and, you know, the punch drunk guys. Like I heard an interview about a year ago with Peter McNeely, the dude that they carted out there to fight Tyson when Tyson got out of prison. Mm-hmm. And it was just hard to listen to, just because, you know, you could tell he still had a pretty sharp mind and a pretty good sense of humor, but you could tell like all the synapses weren't firing in his brain right.
And if you want to see where Jermaine Taylor lost his head, there are two fights. There's a fight with Carl Froch where Froch just beat the shit out of him, and the refs were a little slow in stopping the fight. And then there was a fight against Arthur Abraham where that actually caused a concussion. He had memory loss and all that stuff too. So both of those fights as well ended in the 12th round. He got all the way to the 12th round, and the Abraham fight, I think there was like 10 seconds left and he got stopped. So I think 2009, it's been going on 6 years now since those fights. Those are the two fights when I think Jermaine Taylor, where if there's, you know, down the road they discover something's wrong with him mentally, I think those two fights might have caused it.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, he's got a fight coming up on February 6th. He's scheduled to defend his title against Sergio the Latin Snake Mora on a Friday Night Fight.
Sergio Mora.
Yeah, from The Contender.
Oh, man.
Like whatever happened to that dude? Like, yeah, okay, I guess he's still fighting.
He's still fighting.
Sergio Mora, 25 wins, 3 losses, and 2 draws.
One of those draws isn't Shane Mosley.
Yeah, The Contender. Remember when that was like a big deal? Like, you had The Contender, then you had the other show. I think we've talked about this before with the boxing reality shows. Oscar De La Hoya had one.
Yeah.
The Next Great Champ.
Yes, yes, yes.
And yeah, which is, I don't know. I guess that might have been inspired by Tough Enough to some extent, or The Ultimate Fighter.
Contender was 2005. Tough started in 2005. 5 as well.
When the Ultimate Fighter start?
It's the 10-year anniversary was like 10 years ago this month.
For the Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah.
I think maybe the Ultimate Fighter was a more direct influence coming the year before.
It might have been. But Sergio won $1 million for that, for winning that show.
That's a real, like, that's interesting because that is just counterintuitive to the rise, the traditional rise of a boxer. You know, the hungry dude fighting out of the gym, making his way up. You got $1 million and you haven't even, you know, stepped foot in a professional ring.
Well, he was professional before the show.
Like I'm not a lazy man. I work hard for my money, Marcus. But if you gave me $1 million and like let's say I had like 5 fights, then you give me $1 million and you're like, hey, here you go, congratulations on winning, I'd be pretty tempted to retire right there.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't.
I'd be like, you know what? I'm not gonna get hit upside my head and rattle my brain.
Not at age 24, 25, when you're. This is the peak of your, not the peak of your career, but probably the launching point of your professional career. You would keep going.
That's probably true.
Like, that's still pretty young.
I got about 10 more years where I can fight and get concussed and shoot up at people in the Martin Luther King parade.
Yeah.
Is there a more ironic tribute to Dr. King than shooting up people at the Martin Luther King parade?
What, too soon?
Like, come on, man. Because the kids didn't have candy.
Where's the Malcolm X Day parade? Where's the Malcolm X Day? How about that?
I don't think we'll ever get that, Marcus.
He's too black?
I don't think Malcolm X is like Martin Luther King. Vince McMahon tweeted out that that's his hero. I don't think we're ever going to get the Vince McMahon Malcolm X tweet.
His hero. Come on, Vince. How do you repay your hero? You book R-Truth on television. That's how you repay Martin. R-Truth hasn't been on TV in weeks. He shows up for the Raw on MLK Day.
Yeah. At least they didn't have Big E preaching that day.
Oh, that damn. That'd have been so good.
I have a dream that we can be more than mid-carders. Have a dream one day when black men and white men can fight for the WWE Championship.
Did you see what he said when he came out at the Rumble? Did you read his
lips?
He said, fuck you, Philly. He was getting booed. All of that booed when they came out, the New Day.
The city of brotherly love has no love for the brothers.
Nope. For good reason, too. I can't blame him for this time.
Oh, I got a quick story here as we go off the air, which kind of ties into having love for the brothers. Guess who has shown solidarity for the Black Lives Matter movement?
Oh, I did see this. Ben and Jerry.
Yeah, Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield, the founders of Ben and Jerry, are going to start selling the Black Lives Matter t-shirts in their shop, in their stores. That's very random, but it's pretty cool. I've always liked their ice cream, so now it gives me even more of a reason to be a fat boy.
Does he know, like, half the black community is lactose intolerant and can't enjoy Ben and Jerry's? He's trying to kill us all.
So you saying this is not a move of goodwill? This
my life matters too. I'm black. My dad matters.
You're saying this is a secret plot by Ben and Jerry.
Trying to take us all out.
Mm.
are we getting a Black Lives Matter flavor ice cream?
What would it be? Chocolate on top of chocolate?
No swirl, no vanilla involved. Maybe some caramel to represent the light-skinned brothers.
So, yeah.
Like a chocolate caramel swirl. Yeah.
Are you a fan of Ben & Jerry?
I was. I can't eat anymore.
What was your flavor back in the day?
Cherry Garcia.
Okay. I used to like one, I think it was called Half-Baked.
Oh, yeah, that was good, too.
When they had the brownies and the cookie dough in the same ice cream.
Damn it, I miss ice cream. I have to eat soy ice cream. It's not the same.
That's the price you pay for that hair. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Between ice cream and pizza, man. I just...
Oh.
That's a 1-2 that... That's rough.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's why you haven't seen those Rex Ryan pizza commercials.
Yeah, I try to block him out. I eat cheeseless pizza. It's not the same.
Oh, doesn't even sound worth it.
Nah, it's just it's the sauce and the toppings and the bread.
That doesn't sound appealing.
No?
No.
That's so. And it's not like they give you a discount for having no cheese. They still charge you cheese prices. At least get $2 off for saving you cheese, but no.
Like, no, nah, man, we know a cash cow when we see one.
Yeah.
Oh. So we know now that Marcus, if you didn't know before, Marcus is lactose intolerant. We learned it took us 99 episodes, but we finally learned something new. Like, we learned about your hair last year, and now we learn about your dietary.
That's all tied into the Crohn's. I was good until the Crohn's disease started, so I could tolerate dairy before then. So
it's like a blessing and a curse. Like, you got an amazing head of hair, but you don't get to eat the good stuff.
I would trade. I would go nappy for some pizza.
You go nappy and just be happy with the pizza.
Nappy, happy, and fat. Yeah. Make that trade right now.
All right. I think that's a good way to end the show this week, Marcus.
I think so.
All right. So if the people want to share their condolences at the fact that you have to eat cheeseless pizza, where can they hit you up at?
You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can follow me on Twitter, N8, MozaiK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Check out the show on Twitter at Cospod, KOS_POD. Facebook.com/Kings of Sport. And of course, check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, like, rate, and review the show. Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. And hit up the Podcast Awards site again, podcastawards.com, and enter the Kings of Sport as well as the URL, thekingsofsport.com, and nominate us in the sports category as well as either Best Produced or People's Choice. That is the People's Podcast Award. So that's going to do it for episode 99 of the Kings of Sport. And for those of you that are mathematicians out there, you know what follows 99. A royal rant.
Yeah, swerve.
Take that, internet. Next week, instead of episode 100, we're going to give you a special post-Super Bowl edition, literally right after the Super Bowl is concluded. Marcus and I are going to hop on the computer machine and give our takes on the Super Bowl, give our takes on Katy Perry. Maybe we'll get a wardrobe malfunction. And anything else that goes down in Arizona on Sunday.
Yeah, so to be totally transparent, it's because I'm not going to be around next week, so we're cheating the system here.
You know what, though? I don't know, the way the shows are going, like, we might actually have, we've done over 100 shows.
Oh, yes, we have, yeah.
But the official, we're doing WWE math. The official episode 100 will be not next week, but the following week. And we've got some special guests lined up. We don't know if they'll all come through, but we got some things planned. And you can keep up to date with those things by checking out the Facebook page, and we'll let you know what's going on and, you know, how you can get involved with episode 100. Because I think, you know, we got to find a way to let the people, you know, voice their opinions on this momentous occasion.
Yeah, We'll let you know. February 13th is when it should come out.
Yeah, because without you, you know, we wouldn't be here. We'd probably be here, but we'd be like TNA. Just if you record a show and nobody watches it, did you still record it?
Good point.
So so yeah, that's what's on deck. We've got the special post Super Bowl edition of the Royal Rant coming up, and then the following week, February 13th. Episode 100 of the Kings of Sport podcast. So I think that's going to do it, Marcus.
I think that covers it.
That covers it. All right. I'm going to go and pat myself on the back for that brilliant Martin Luther King Snickers joke. And you can go back to just crying yourself to sleep because you can't have pizza. That was cold. That was cold. I admit that was a low blow. My bad. That's no way to end episode 99.
Nah, too late now. It's ending. It's over.
Well, you guys can check us back here next week for our Super Bowl reactions and whatever else we have. I'm sure there'll be some ratchetness in Arizona this weekend. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. We're just here so we won't get fined. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks.